Was it symbolic or does it have a serious impact? Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy, and along with me today is my Vice Chairman, co-host, good friend, co-analyst, and an all-around good thinker, Chuck Mike.
Well, we'll see how good a thinker I am, but I appreciate that compliment, and hello, folks.
Okay, you know, as you know, if you've been tuned in this week, we're doing some post-election wrap-up analysis. Talked about issue one and issue two at some length. Today, we're going to turn and talk about state issue three. Now, for those of you who went to the polls, you know what issue three was all about because 2.3 million of you voted on this issue. This was the initiated constitutional amendment that was brought by the Ohio Healthcare Freedom folks to basically, as a repudiation of mandated health insurance and health care levels from the federal government. It was a response to the passage last year in April of 2010 of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, or what is also known as Obamacare. Group collected the signatures, put it on the ballot as state issue three, and 3.3 million people went to the polls to vote specifically on this issue, which was passed by the voters, and the language of issue three is now going to be ensconced as part of Ohio's constitution by a vote of 66 to 34. That's 66% voting in favor, 34% voting against. Matter of fact, it had the strongest support turnout of all three issues on the ballot, Chuck. You know, that's a 2-to-1 margin, clearly 2-to-1 margin of people voting in favor of protecting our healthcare freedom in this state and saying that not only shouldn't the federal government, but neither the state or the local government should be mandating for anybody what kinds, levels, quality, amounts of healthcare individual citizens should be required to have.
Yeah, and this essentially was a repudiation of the idea that everyone should be forced to buy healthcare. Now, some have been saying that everyone is in favor of universal health care, but they don't want to have to buy it.
They want to have to pay for it. That's right.
Well, now, okay, I can see how in a kind of a schizophrenic world, people would actually think that health care might be quote-unquote free. But as everybody knows, there is no such thing as a free ride. Free healthcare is paid for by something. And in fact, what it will be paid for is by higher taxes and fees and, you know, whatever clever names people can come up with.
And a loss of opportunity and industry and choices by everybody else.
Well, and that being the case, as we all are well aware, you know, Sarah Palin got made terrible sport of for saying that there were going to be death panels. But the fact is that those death panels are already being worked on. They don't call them death panels, but what they are is rationing panels, which means that if you're too old or if you've got diabetes of a severe fashion or if you've got any number of health problems, perhaps you're not as mentally acute as everyone else around you, or you know, you're profoundly retarded or whatever, there will be a score that will be assigned to you to decide whether you get a heart transplant or treatment for liver cancer or some fast-growing, perhaps lung cancer, some kind of a fast-growing cancer. These things, and these are not hard to discern as items, things that are going to happen, because this is the way it's done in other countries. For instance, Britain, which is considered to have one of the best systems around, almost nobody's happy with the British public health service. Doctors, since they can no longer, you know, set their own fees, and are, in fact, forced employees of the state, now basically come in at 8 and leave at 4. And if there are still people in the clinic who need to be seen, come back tomorrow. This is not an exaggeration. These things happen over and over and over again. Basically, you can't get MRIs, you can't get surgeries, and sometimes when they do the surgery, they cut the wrong leg off because nobody's paying really close attention in the British National Health Service. And this is the kind of thing that people didn't want, and therefore, they came in and voted yes on issue three,
right,
to say no to Obamacare.
That's right. And, you know, we talked yesterday in relation to issue two, how if issue two was supposed to be in some ringing endorsement of President Obama's agenda and strength of him going to show in Ohio in 2012, issue three kind of put the wet blanket on that whole thing, because 870,000 more voters, or voters who voted against supporting issue two, did vote to support issue three. That even though they said, well, why don't you touching my mine or my loved one's pension and benefits, or their ability to negotiate with their jobs, I don't want you touching my health care either. I mean, that was clearly evident across the boards, because, again, 2.22 million voting in favor. The numbers are incredible. Only 2.14 million voted in favor, or voted to repeal Senate Bill 5. So even more people were clear, even though there was 200,000 fewer votes that were cast on issue 3 for some reason. And I'm going to play around with numbers to figure out why we had a bit of an undervote on issue 3. That, you know, you basically had people who just didn't know which way to go on that, and that just kind of surprises. But more people got it. They understood clearly at a basic level, hey, wait a minute. I don't want to be in socialized medicine. I don't want to have to wait in lines like in Canada. I don't want to have to be on a list for getting basic or maybe even life-saving health care when I've already got that. You know, America has been a model for the nations in its health care. It has, you know, why do you have people who cross the borders from north and south and who fly from Europe and the Middle East and Asia and other places to come to America for health care? I mean, many countries send their students here to train to be doctors because of the American healthcare system. You know, we got one of the best things going on in the face of the planet is our healthcare system. The fact that, honestly, Chuck, if you think about it, when you think about the burden on healthcare needs, how people and our lifestyles and how everything else works around, we really, even though healthcare is expensive, we're getting a lot of good things for our dollar already in healthcare.
Let's just say that before the federal government meddled with healthcare, it not only was the best in the world, but it was also reasonably expensive. There were always people who needed an operation for this or that who couldn't get it, at least not by normal means, and would save money or would go to places where they could get it at a reduced price or get help with it. And usually that had to do with the church services or those kinds of things. And we've discussed this before, the fact that healthcare has moved from the realm of the church into the realm of private business, and it has not been an advantageous to the system to do so.
Yeah, that's
For instance, you know, the churches, virtually every hospital I know in the town that where we are, or where I am, Columbus, virtually everyone except the county hospital started out as a church hospital.
That's true. That's true. But you know what, Chuck? You know, getting right back to just the issue itself, no matter what, you're always going to have those who, when the voters clearly state their preferences, are going to try to say, well, no, not really, because X, Y, and Z. And issue three is no different. I mean, even before the weekend before the election and in a week leading up to the election, you had folks, usually with a group called Progress Ohio, which is the liberal, progressive, heavily hardcore left organization, networking organization in Ohio. They were doing debates with the issue three folks. And they were talking about how, oh, it was going to negatively impact all this. When those arguments stopped being effective, they switched to their final argument, which they're still carrying on today after the election's over with. And that is, well, that vote didn't matter. That vote didn't count. It doesn't matter what Ohioans do. And it doesn't matter that 66% of the voters said, don't mess with our health care. It's the federal government. They can do what they want and you can't stop them. And that's what I want to talk about now, Chuck, because that's the arguments being made. You and I both know it because we teach the Constitution.
That's
right. We teach the classes. We know what this is. They're going to Article 6 of the United States Constitution, and they're using what we know as the Supremacy Clause. That's right, the Supremacy Clause, which basically says, and if you check, if you've got your Constitution open in front of you, I don't have mine.
I do.
If you got your Constitution open in front of you, just read, folks, what that Supremacy Clause actually says.
And Article 6 says, this Constitution, comma, and the laws of the United States which shall be made in pursuance thereof.
Okay, keep going.
And all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding.
Well, see, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Your vote didn't count, or did it? Now, Chuck, this is why we teach you and I both teach, and we talk together, and we each teach it separately, and we teach it at Camp American every summer. So, folks, if you've got kids the ages of 12 and up, and you want them to learn how to really read this Constitution, send them on up to us. Talk with Chuck about that. You can visit Camp American's website through our page at principlepolicy.com. But we teach that the Supremacy Clause, that words have meaning, and that meaning is very important. Now, isn't it?
Oh, it's absolutely important.
See, because if you just read it on the face, just like Chuck did, and you're a casual listener, and somebody says, well, did you see it? It said, hey, the laws and everything else, that takes precedent over anything a state does, and so therefore issue three doesn't count. Some people would believe that, but why shouldn't they believe it, Chuck?
Well, the language in here is very instructive. For instance, the Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of people don't understand that in documents like the Constitution, the word shall is what's called a prescriptive word.
Right. Well, in public policy parlance, which is what I've dealt in for almost 20 years, shall is directive language. So that tells you you have no other option. If it says shall or shall not, then you, the agency or the agent, whether it be the legislature or the executive or anything, if that Constitution says you shall do this, you don't have any option. You can't say, well, I didn't feel like doing it, or I didn't like the circumstance, so I chose not to do it. You're bound. It's directive language as opposed to the word may, which is permissive language. It says it's up to you to decide. You know, if it feels good, do it. If it doesn't, then you're not bound to do it. But this word is shall, and that's directive, and that means you must do it.
What that means is that the law-making ability of the federal government is limited by something, because the Constitution and laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof. Well, what does that mean?
Well, first of all, we got to ask the question, Chuck, when it talks about, it says, this Constitution, comma, and that separates a thought there. So it's saying, right, okay, this document here, and the laws of the United States, which shall be made, where are the laws made? If we're looking at that Constitution, where are the laws made? Who's got the lawmaking authority, Chuck?
The Congress, Article 1.
Article 1, Section 1. All legislative power herein granted is vested in a Congress of the United States, which shall consist of a Senate and a House of Representatives. So that's it. That's the only place that a law can be made is in Congress. Now, everybody will say, well, wait a minute. Wasn't the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, that was passed by Congress, right? Well, yeah,
yes,
that's true. It was passed by Congress. Okay, Chuck, explain to people why we're still right.
Article 1 also contains a limitation of congressional power. If you look at Article 1, Section 8, you will see what's called the enumerated powers. And the enumerated powers are a list of powers that have been delegated from the state governments and the people directly to the Congress of the United States of America. That is a rather specific list. But the fact is, if you go to Article 1, Section 8, and you look over it really fast, you will see that nowhere is it stated or implied that the United States Congress has been delegated the authority to deal with the issues of health.
Well, also, it has to do with the three things that the federal government does have a constitutional responsibility for in relation to the states, and we call that DDT. That's what you came up with, Chuck. DDT, defense, diplomacy, and trade. Those are the only three areas that the feds have any legitimacy in dealing with the states with.
Now, how do we know that's true? Well, remember, if you go back to Article 6, it says laws made in pursuance. If you'll recall, the Bill of Rights is part of the United States Constitution. Right. There's one in here that's very important to what we're talking about, and that is Article 10. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. In other words, all those powers that are not listed in the enumerated powers and have not been handed to Congress by a subsequent constitutional amendment are forbidden to the federal government and are retained by the states specifically or to the people. Mm-hmm. So therefore, health care remains the realm of the individual or the state, depending on that individual state's constitution.
Ladies and gentlemen, be with us tomorrow at 5:30 because we've got a little bit more to discuss on the issues and another issue that may be coming before you next year. Stay with us.